evening. Welcome to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber. I'm an employment law and business law attorney at the law office of Eric M. Sauber. And I'm here tonight, as I am every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio NYC, where I host this show. And on this show, my goal is to help small to mid-sized businesses and entrepreneurs in all industries to navigate these challenging times of the pandemic. And we do so by providing information and guidance on employment issues, financial issues, and other business matters that may impact your day-to-day. And in that spirit, I'm very glad tonight to welcome my colleague and friend, Matthew Ricks. Matt is an MBA and certified financial planner, a CFP. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. Great to be here.
Great to have you. I want to just tell our guests what our topic is for tonight. I should say our audience, that is, what our topic would be. And the show tonight is about financial planning during COVID-19. And for our topic, Matthew and I will be discussing the fact that whether you're an employer right now or an employee transitioning to a hybrid or change workforce, it's really crucial to have sound financial planning for your business and your personal life. We asked the question of what a hybrid workforce may mean for your budget and spending, and how the pandemic may have changed your need for things like emergency funding or emergency funds to be saved, as well as questions around implications of the new normal, how that may impact those with special needs and their families when it comes to financial matters and financial plans. And so in that spirit, as May mentioned, I'm welcoming Matt to the show. And Matt, I want to read a bit of an intro about you to really do you justice, if I may, a proper introduction.
By all means.
Okay, great. So as I mentioned, folks, my guest tonight is Matthew Ricks. Matt is an MBA and CFP. He is the president and founder of Haystack Financial Planning, a registered investment advisory firm in New York. And as a financial planner who focuses on the disabled and special needs community, Matthew has found the perfect way to merge financial planning with his passion for being of service and serving others. Matt Ricks is a certified financial planner, professional, and fiduciary that operates on a fee-only basis. Matthew enjoys living in New York City with his wife and their two sons, and they also enjoy exploring playgrounds, riding the bus and subway, pre-COVID times at least, hopefully maybe post-COVID, who knows, right? And searching for cool construction equipment. When not spending time with his family or running Haystack, you can find Matt walking one of the local golf courses or tapping a beat with his fingers as a recovering drummer, interesting, and searching for the perfect grilled cheese, or contemplating his next home improvement project despite living in a New York City co-op. So with that, Matt, once again, really glad to have you tonight on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was awesome to be asked, and I'm looking forward to it.
Sure thing. I had a quick surprise question for you. Have you found that perfect grilled cheese sandwich in New York City, or does it not exist? Is it an oasis?
It all depends on what you're looking for, right? Do you like a crusty bread? What kind of bread do you like as your vehicle? Perfect is a relative thing, right?
Very
true. How do you feel in the moment, right? So yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of very tasty and good ones out there though.
All right. That's good to know. At least, you know, your mission is not, you know, in vain. So, and with that, good, that actually kind of segues into my first question in a more serious note with you and joking a bit, but if you can tell us a bit more about yourself, like how you were inspired to found your company and any additional services or info that I may have left out in my introduction.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I started my firm, Haystack Financial Planning, during COVID-19. I've been an advisor and a planner for 7 years now. Mm-hmm. Prior to that was working in, you know, institutional asset management, working with large corporation retirement plans. Made the switch to become a financial advisor and planner 7 years ago. Started my career at the big wirehouses, right? Kind of made the transition away from that. And then, you know, always had something in the back of my head, like I don't really, you know, this isn't perfect, but it's something. And then, you know, as with anything else in life, you make adjustments, make things on the fly. Never saw myself as an entrepreneur, but I felt more confident as during COVID-19, my clients quickly adapted to this all virtual life, right? The relationship, meetings, everything being digital and virtual, not because of choice, but because of just circumstances, right? Mm. Couldn't meet in person, didn't want to meet in person because of everything else going on. Right. So it kind of gave me more confidence to start my own, and it's now been 6 months. Mm-hmm. So Firm is still very new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I focus on serving the disabled and special needs community, and it's something I'm proud to do, and it's something I'm looking to continue building on.
Yeah, it's interesting, Matt. You know, you talk about that backdrop and background of large institutions. And I have to say, a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of people I've met over the years who are self-employed and successful at it, I might add, are people who started out at either big banks, big companies, big accounting firms, big law firms, you know. So it's interesting to see. And I know when we met through networking and other circles, maybe about six years ago, I think it was, hard to believe, but maybe the spring of 2015. And I must say you've been instrumental in terms of just a colleague and a helpful person to know over the years. I remember that you were working at, I think, a large institutional outfit. And so it's good to see you on your own and bringing your experience and also your unique personal traits and passion. You know, it's what you do. So good to...
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising that most entrepreneurs probably start out at big firms and they learn what they don't like, right? And then they say, well, I can do that better. Mm-hmm. Certainly wasn't my intent of, hey, I can do it better. It was just the world was shifting. My clients were more amenable to it. And then my industry is shifting to be much more friendly to one man or one woman shows like I am here where the technology is available, right? Because more cost effective to do these types of things. So, you know, I'm fortunate enough and lucky enough and blessed enough to have a client base where it allowed me to go off on my own and start my own RIA and continue to build and under my vision and under, you know, my purview. So, yeah.
Hmm. Right. I think all true. And I think it all kind of, the talk right now about COVID and how you started your own outfit, your own company during this pandemic. I think it's an interesting point because I know as a financial planner, you surely took into account, I imagine, all those financial aspects of running your own business, right? And the saving and budgets and so forth and, you know, projections. So it might segue into a question I had for you, if I may. Wondering, Matt, like prior to COVID-19, what would you say some of the most common financial mistakes were that you saw clients making, mainly around spending and saving money?
The biggest thing I saw throughout last year was emergency fund and lack of one. Mm. So what I mean by emergency fund is not, oh, I have some money and an extra money in checking or savings, right? Mm. And then when you go on a trip, you pull from there to fund it. I mean, an account totally separate from everything else that is one of those break glass in case of emergencies. Mm-hmm. And the rule of thumb, it used to be 3 to 6 months of fixed expenses. It varies based on advisor, based on planner. What you saw a lot of last year is as kind of corporations and layoffs and the world shut down, people who didn't have a emergency fund built up didn't have cash, right? They didn't have how to pay bills. So either they went out and extended themselves via debt, credit cards, loans, whatever it might be, or they stopped paying any sort of loans or any sort of debt instruments they had outstanding because they didn't have the cash flow. Right. So I'd say that's been the biggest thing pre-COVID to post-COVID is a lot of people had said, hey, I want more buffer because I've seen what happens. Or I've heard the stories now. Like it used to be, yeah, but what if? Well, a lot of people live through that what if now, that almost worst case scenario for a lot of people happened. So a lot of times it's you have to live through it to understand it and to see what it means versus the academics or theory behind it, right?
Yes.
So the academics and theory say, oh, well, you need this cash buffer in case something happens. You could say the same thing about, you know, insurance policies, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's what if, just in case, all those different terms. It's like, well, it's never going to happen to me. Happened to a lot of people that didn't think it was possible. So I've worked with some clients where their cash buffers go from going to that 3 to 6 months has been up to now 12 months. So they want a full year and it's not just fixed expenses. They want a year of total expenses so they can live their life as it stands today, or at least that's their aspiration and their objective with zero income, right? So if something happens to them, they lose a job or they're not able to work, they can live the life they lead right now without much issue for 12 months.
Right.
But that's not for everyone. That's a very case by case circumstance, but just an example.
Right. I can see, Matt, how that'd be really good, interesting and big issue that came up in the last year for sure. And you talk about that people, I love what you said about it's people like they can have it in their head. I think you said academic or the theory. And then when you experience it, right, it becomes like more, almost I guess like real and more. I found that with clients and also just in general in life, clients, when it comes to employment label issues, often will know what they should do to comply and how they should be proactive. That's, I guess, the analogy of saving, right? It's like the what if, you know, we get audited by the Department of Labor, et cetera. And until it happens to many of them, a lot of companies don't take those precautionary measures. So I think it's great that you're, you know, coaching or encouraging clients, counseling them, I should say, to take those measures, I imagine.
Yeah. And like I said, it depends on who you are and what your situation is. For some people, 12 months is a lot, right? They're like, I don't need that because they have other avenues to draw from, right?
Right.
Maybe that's an emergency line of credit. Maybe they can tap into a home equity line of credit. You know, they have other vehicles, or maybe they have other, you know, investment accounts or other accounts available to them, or they have other sources of income outside of their main employment, right? They have a side hustle, or if they are fortunate enough to have a trust of some kind that pays them on a monthly, quarterly, annual basis, right? If they have other income, maybe not as much of an issue as someone who is an entrepreneur themselves and their business dried up.
Right.
If you're someone who is very dependent on working in person, right? Think a photographer. How many companies shut down photo shoots, shut down marketing budgets, or completely pivoted from what they were doing? Well, as a photographer, you can't really work, right? How do you, you can't plan for the world shutting down.
Right.
Versus someone who, maybe, you know, like we are both fortunate where our roles could mostly transition easily to all virtual, right? As an attorney, as a financial planner, there's not, you know, there's certain aspects that are better in person or more preferred in person, but for the most part, you can get the job done through a computer, through a phone.
Absolutely.
It just depends on, like I said, everyone's circumstances and what they're doing.
Right. I think it's an important point there too, that it's really case by case, individual by individual, business by business analysis, or really to look at each person's circumstances. And you're right, we are fortunate in that our professions lend themselves to this type of medium. I've had client consults on Zoom. I imagine you have as well. If I were, let's say, as you mentioned, a photographer, if I were a restaurant owner, let's say, or maybe a massage therapist, I know some people who were acupuncturists who, when the pandemic hit, they of course serve an essential function, but a lot of people who were going for different reasons, like for stress or for headaches, either they couldn't go or they thought it's not worth the risk of catching COVID to sit in the waiting room. And so their businesses really took a hit. And I really want to talk with you more about this and other questions. We are getting a bit close to our, believe it or not, our first commercial break. And time flies when you're having fun, I suppose. So folks, I'm Eric Sauver, host of Employment Law Today. When we come back, I'm going to ask Matthew Ricks of Haystack Financial Planning to talk about this post-COVID world. We'll talk about some of the changing workforce models, hybrid, remote, part in person, and what that might mean for your budget or spending plans. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Ann Dow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. Once again, I'm your host, Eric Sauver, and here tonight with my guest, Matthew Ricks, founder and president of Haystack Financial Planning. And Matt and I were discussing the topic of financial planning during COVID, and as well as some of the changes Matt's observed over the last, I'd say, 15 months thereabouts, almost, of this pandemic we've all been in, and talking about issues of saving and spending and how to plan better going forward. So Matt, with that, I wanted to ask you, let's talk about the post-COVID world for a bit, if we can. I say that with bated breath because it's always a lot of twists and turns in the last 14, 15 months, which I think goes to your point, right? That you never know how long a dire situation could last for you financially and how important it is to save. And question I had, though, was about what can some of the changing workforce models, mainly hybrid, remote, or in-person, what can that mean for people's, say, spending and budget plans from your point of view?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So as companies continue to either ask or highly suggest employees get back to the office,
right?
You read all the different articles, all the different news. Some are requiring proof of vaccinations. Some know that that's, you know, you could talk to that from a legal standpoint. Oh, yes. But from a financial standpoint, you know, thinking back, okay, everyone's basically been working from home, or most people. There are employees that have been working throughout all this, right? I'm talking kind of the traditional, quote unquote, white collar workers, where they've been working from home and working virtually. Mm-hmm. So while they're home, a lot of people have been saving money on things like commuting costs, whether you drive, take, you know, for locally here, New Jersey Transit, Metro North, like RRR, right? Even just the Metro card, unlimited, mm-hmm. right? You're saving a few hundred bucks a month. All right. Have you just been saving that money? Has it gone elsewhere? Along with that, most people now have a nice little home setup. All right. What does that cost? How are you handling that? One thing you have to note is your employer helping out defer some of those costs? I know some employers are offering an amount or something saying, hey, if you need a new computer to work from home, here's kind of the budget that we'll cover. Different companies are different parameters. Some mm-hmm. companies be like, yeah, the computer's yours forever. Some are like, yeah, well, you know, there's some strings attached, right?
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, that's kind of, you know, going back to the office, right? Mm-hmm. The hybrid is, you know, some of my wife works for a big bank. And the plan right now is for her to go back 3 days a week and then 2 days a week on an alternating basis.
Sure.
So in this case, you'd be like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so on and so forth, mm-hmm. until they're back to full capacity. Mm-hmm. They don't have a timeline for that yet. Mm-hmm. But what that means is she'll still be working from home 2 to 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. So for her, she still has now additional commuting costs, right? Mm-hmm. On top of those costs of having a home office.
Right.
So when a lot of people think home office, the first thing they think is, oh, great, I can write off a home office. Well, that's not really the case if you're an employee.
Right.
Now, let me throw a caveat here. I am not a CPA. I'm not a tax, preparer. consult your, you know, accountant, your tax attorney, all that fun legalese so I don't get in trouble.
Sure. I hear that.
But more times than not, if you are an employee, you cannot deduct a home office. For someone like myself, I'm a firm owner. Eric, someone like yourself, you can do that, provided the space is solely used for business purposes.
Yes.
So sticking a desk in your dining room, not going to cut it.
Right.
Your a guest bedroom that is rarely used, you probably go a little more of that route. Having a desk in the kids' playroom, again, not really, you know.
Yeah.
Not really going to kind of define that.
Sure.
So that's one of the big things to look out for, right? If you're an employee of a firm, a W-2 employee, right? More times than not, you cannot use that. However, that's not to say if your partner, spouse, or you have a business outside of that, you may be able to use it for that purposes. So something, again, work with your accountant or your tax professional on to see if that makes sense for you to utilize.
Right.
A lot of times it's based on square footage, right, of what the space is. You know, along with kind of the hybrid, right? This part in the office, part out of the office. You have kind of these ancillary things like lunch, meals, right? You've been working from home now. Chances are you're not walking out to the deli down the street or to, you know, this here in the city, right? The street carts, right? The street meat guy here, the food truck there. You're going to your kitchen, right? Yep. So more times than not, your groceries are less expensive than if you buy meals out. So from a budget perspective, do you have that built in, that additional cost of food, right? Or if you make your own coffee. Now, if you want coffee in the middle of the day, you're at the office, unless your company has one of those machines or has a service or something, maybe there's additional cost there. So all these things where people have kind of gotten set in their budgetary ways these last 15 months, and now they're going to have to adjust again. So how does that look? You know, remember what, you know, your pre-COVID work looked like. Are you going to pack lunch to help save money? Or are you going to go right back to it and be like, hey, I really missed, you know, the cheesesteak here and I'm going to hit it hard because I missed it so often, or my coffee spot or my guy here, there, you know, I'm a big fan of shoe shines. I love to get a shoe shine, right? It's a nice relaxing thing. Read the paper, a couple minutes to kind of decompress, right? It's a couple bucks, right? That's more additional money you probably weren't doing while you're sitting at home, because most of us weren't wearing dress shoes or shoes that needed shining.
Right.
So how does all that look to your personal budget and your personal spending? From an employer perspective, right? You have all the different government regulations of how much space you need. I know different employers are talking about, I've heard rumblings of having vaccinated floors versus non-vaccinated floors if you own multiple floors in a building, and what that means as far as space. How close can you put people?
Right.
And obviously that's a cost. If you could put more people in a square footage, that helps save you money. Your cost per employee goes down, right?
Yes.
However, you have all the other things like dividers, antibacterial wipes, whatever other kind of mask if necessary. If you have, I've heard of some companies potentially hiring elevator operators, right? To push the buttons still, because some people, I don't know, right? There's all these other costs that could be there. How does that affect your bottom line as a business owner? Especially in New York, right? Good chance. If you're a business owner, you don't own the building. You don't own that. So how is the building you're in handling these things? And how do you relay that to your employees and their comfort? Right. And that's where you kind of come in from the law side and what they can, can't require, what they can ask, what I don't want to say, but what I don't want to say benefits, but what can they offer and what do they have to provide? Right, like to their
perks
employees.
Versus mandates, kind of along those lines.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. You know, as well as maybe as an employer, you want to incentivize your employees to stay home because you found they were more productive without that hour and a half commute each way. They were working longer hours, being more productive. So maybe you want to incentivize them to stay home. All right. So what does that mean? Chances are you're probably going to have to help cover some of the home office costs. Right? That might be a starting point. Maybe you need to give them a bump in salary to help do that. Maybe it's another benefit of a, you know, a Seamless or a Grubhub corporate account where they have a stipend for lunch ordering in. I don't know. You could get creative with some of this. Because obviously, especially in the New York metro area, real estate's expensive. So if you could cut your footprint and your employees are as productive or more productive, that's mm-hmm. good for your bottom line. Sure. So yeah, a lot of different things to consider on all sides.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, Matt. Absolutely. I mean, what I really hear is, it's interesting too, because as you're discussing and talking about the different factors to consider for spending and saving, I hear that, you know, from the employee side, the W-2 employee, let's say, who's working at a company, a lot of expenses that maybe we all may have had and either taken for granted as just part of our week. The shoe shine is a great example. I too used to enjoy a good shoe shine. And now my wife and I had a date night. We decided to go out. We're both fully vaccinated. So we went to this place in New Jersey, and I realized I hadn't worn my dress shoes in a very long time. They were dusty, you know, I had to dust them off. And but certainly the employees are going back. It sounds like they're reincurring a lot of the old costs of that, the commute that you mentioned, you know, the monthly pass, the subway, et cetera, the food. And for employers, what I hear, and I see this from my clients as well, bless you, is I see a lot of clients of mine who are having new costs they didn't have in the past. So, for example, complying with, I know a lot of companies out there might be juggling, they have to comply with certain OSHA guidelines around safe workplace. And also they want to balance local and state and city health officials, health departments, saying what you can and can't do. And then you have the CDC giving guidance and the EOC saying you can, you know, incentivize folks to get the vaccine, but you can't require it. And then there's other now legislation and guidance that you can require the vaccine as long as someone doesn't claim a disability-based exemption or religious accommodation. So it gets very complicated, and it's a whole other topic then. But I think the point is that companies out there are definitely seeing some new and changing expenditures in their budget, and employees as well. So good that you raised that issue for us to think about.
Yeah, and think about it. You know, you and I are solo firm owners, right? Mm-hmm. What does it look like for us? You know, right. I know you had a space and a co-working. Mm-hmm. I started my business through COVID, so I don't have that, mm-hmm. right? I didn't have that expense. Mm-hmm. But at some point, do I want that, or do I want to continue working out of my apartment, right? Mm-hmm. How does our business, what works best for us as solo, right. you know, firm owners? Because mm-hmm. our bottom line are, you know, you have a family, I have a family, you know, the commute, mm-hmm. the costs, all these things, everyone has to balance it out and figure it out. It's no different no matter kind of where you sit along the spectrum.
Right. Very true. And I think that those listening tonight in the audience, whether they be solos like us as well with their own firm or practice or a large or mid-sized company, has to look at their professions. I know, for example, as an attorney, I have my office in the city and need to keep a New York presence for various reasons in accordance with my license, which I do. And so it's all just like you as a financial planner, I know have different requirements and as well. But I think it's really important. I think that the sort of takeaway I'm hearing, Matt, is just that the hybrid and the remote workplace, that the changes we have may impact what we sit down to do and how we make our budgets and how we decide, you know, how much to save, how much to spend. And the last thing I just wanted to say before a commercial break is I was really struck by what you said about the hybrid workplace. I think a lot of folks are looking at the benefits of, and that's certainly a good thing to do, to look at the benefits of how it may be helpful. But to your point, you can actually have more cost incurred with a hybrid environment than you might as only remote or only in person, because you've got, like you mentioned, the good example of your wife, the home office, those expenses, and the commuting on top of it.
Absolutely true. One foot in both worlds may be more expensive. Absolutely true.
Mm. And we'll talk more about those worlds in a moment, folks. We need to up for another commercial break. So once again, you're listening to Employment Law Today here on Talk Radio NYC. I'm Eric Soffer, host of the show, employment law attorney. My guest tonight, Matthew Ricks of Haystack Financial Planning. So stick around. We'll come back and talk more about financial planning and the special needs community. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber, here on Talk Radio NYC. My guest tonight, Matthew Ricks, a certified financial planner with his own company, Haystack Financial Planning. And Matt, I want to segue a little bit into your particular focus of serving the special needs disabled community. But before I do, I want to do follow up on a question with the factors that business owners must consider, and wondering, are there certain methods or techniques that you use, let's say, with your business clients in terms of helping them to best map out a budget or a spending plan or things of that nature?
So those clients of mine that are business owners, most times they're small, mid-sized businesses, right? Where it's right. Them and a handful of employees. So a lot of times they have that pretty much squared away. Mm-hmm. Where I've helped out a lot in the past year or so, mm-hmm. is helping them navigate like the payroll protection program, mm-hmm. The SBA loans, yeah. and making them alert on, hey, like, here's the guidelines, here's how you go through it, you know, working with their accountants and their tax professionals to get the information necessary. And there's a little bit of a stigma around that program, right? Mm. And people are like, well, like, unless your business is failing. And I was like, all right, well, yeah, you could look at it that way. I was like, but if you have a business and you still need to, you have rent, you have payroll, you have all these expenses that don't go away,
right?
Through this pandemic, you know, the government's offering you assistance. Mm-hmm. Why not at least look into it? And if you make a decision not to partake, that's a personal choice. Sure. I know there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of news out there, a lot of stories in the past few months about large companies that fit the criteria that took money and quickly gave it back once they kind of got blowback.
Yeah.
But my clients are certainly not that large.
Mine too.
So but that's really it from a budgeting perspective, is just making them aware of that type of stuff, as well as a lot of the work I do with them is on retirement plans. So it's part budgeting, right? As a business owner, how are you saving for your retirement versus what are you offering your employees as benefits on that front? Because that's a cash flow perspective, right? Depending on what program and what benefits you offer can determine what your obligation is as an employer versus what you want to do and what you're kind of giving out of the kindness of your heart, so to speak, right?
Right.
Does that answer your question?
It does actually, yes. It's actually very, very helpful. And I think it's important that the idea of giving your clients the information and about resources out there. And I think from an employment perspective, I know that companies need to factor in cost, but they also need to factor in the law. So I've had clients come to me and say, hey, I think it would be cheaper for the bottom line if I, let's say, were to make all my employees like independent contractors, and then I would have to pay them unemployment insurance or workers' comp and so forth. And you know what I found, oh, bless you. I know you have a cold. Hope you're feeling okay. Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. And what I found is that companies need to be mindful that, sure, there are ways to save money, but make sure you're doing it correctly and legally. So if you have, you know, six employees and you say, oh, I can make them all independent contractors and save a lot of money on all the different taxes and workers' comp. Well, if you haven't really changed their duties and they still answer to you and under your direction and control and all those factors that I look at, you are generally, you basically still have an employee, you're just now misclassifying them. So I think it's really important what you said too about working with your, you know, your tax advisor, your CPA, and just, you know, working with professionals to really get this all down pat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And from a retirement plan perspective, right? Even if you reclassify them as the 1099, certain plans are really more about how many hours they work.
True.
So whether they work the hours or not, you know, you could be have a 401k versus a simple IRA versus an SEP or a SEP IRA. Yep. All those have different characteristics and different requirements and different, what's the word I want to use, but different terms, right? Depending as an employer on what you can contribute and who qualifies for the plan. Mm-hmm. So you could reclassify them, but it doesn't mean you could all of a sudden be like, yeah, and, you know, they're now 1099. I don't need to pay them their kind of their contribution. I don't need to contribute. They're no longer an employee. Mm-hmm. Well, depending on what type of plan you have, they still met some of the criteria. So yeah, you have to.
Right. Yeah. Good. I think it's an excellent point there as well. Yes, you know, certainly. And I know we're talking a lot about businesses. I know that a lot of your specialty also has to do with individuals and families, including helping financial planning needs of those who might be alternatively abled or the disabled community and their families. So I thought maybe we can talk about the special needs community for a moment. If that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So you want to kind of how I got into it or how I started to focus on it? You want to start there or you have a specific question for me?
That's a great starting point. How did you segue into the special needs disabled community in your financial planning practice?
Sure. So I initially got involved predominantly through pro bono work. I'm a member of the Financial Planning Association, our local chapter here in the New York City area, has a very robust and well-renowned pro bono where as a member, you can volunteer your services and work with different organizations around the New York area and different community organizations to provide pro bono planning. I came across a number of individuals who either more times than not, it was a parent who had a child with a disability or special need, and navigating some of the different programs can be confusing. I saw that enough to say, okay, hey, kind of, it's on my radar here. And then through natural course of business, I came across it doing some plans for some clients and some prospects. Again, a lot of times it's a parent where their child has a need or a disability and trying to help them say, okay, you know what? Depending on how old your child is, depending on what the diagnosis is and what everything else in your situation involves, for your financial plan, if it's you and your partner, you and your spouse, right? You're not planning for two lifetimes. You may be planning for at least an additional lifetime after yours. Yeah. So that changes parameters greatly. So with that, you have to get other professionals involved, right? Professionals in the legal community, right? That are specialized in the various trusts for special needs individuals, special needs trusts, pooled trusts, all that fun stuff that goes with it, right? Making sure that you understand how that works and how, you know, if you're gifting or you're setting up your estate properly, you're not going to disqualify them from a program that is based on their assets versus based on their income, right? Yep. It's not clear cut. So I found all that out through this, did more research, said how many planners and advisors are really focusing on this community. And based on the size of the community, where if you look at some of the most recent numbers, it's one in five, one in four adults in the U.S. will be diagnosed with a disability or need at some point in their lives.
Right.
So you're talking about roughly 100 million people at some point. Wow. Mm-hmm. Not a small community. And there's not nearly enough advisors or planners that are focusing or at least outwardly marketing towards this community. So I said, hey, look, there's a gap here. And especially as I started to kind of formulate my own firm, I said, look, marketing is always simpler when you're talking to a specific audience. Mm-hmm. I enjoy working with these families, these individuals. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd. I'm a dork. I love the intricacies of it, right? Along with, you know, all the different layers. It's like, okay, how do I solve their financial plan and get a strategy and a recommendation in place for all these different, you know, variables? That gets kind of my financial planning juices going, so to speak.
Sure.
So yeah, that's kind of the impetus of how I got there.
Right. Right. It's interesting. I mean, really to start it out with the pro bono and then seeing the need and then, you know, feeling fulfilled doing it. Those intricacies you talk about, Matt, and if you get me started, as you know, on employment law intricacies and the details and nuances, how to plan for your labor and employment and needs and how to, you know, follow the law, but also defend against you. So I love that stuff too. So it's like, you know, my thinking is people I know, whether they're guests in the show or just colleagues, if they love doing something that other people can't stand doing, maybe their clients, for example, then God bless, you know, because I know clients who'd rather die than read through or redraft a 20-page contract. And I'm like, great, let me check it out. And, you know, the world needs financial planners. We need surgeons that love, you know, looking, cutting people open and checking out the, you know, juicy inner workings. And having had surgery a couple of times for minor injuries and such, I always decline the surgeon's invitation to watch the films or video of arm surgery. And like, you can see that I don't want to see that, you know, like, no, just... So great to hear that story. And I'm wondering if we can, just my other question I had for you was about how the change, say, work environment, you know, from the pandemic, how that might impact people with disabilities and how it might impact their family members. For example, the remote work, the hybrid work.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're of working age, right, and you're someone that has a physical disability or a need, mm-hmm. this hybrid or this work from home can be beneficial to you. Mm-hmm. As we know, not all infrastructure is set up to be fully accessible. Sure. You know, the subway system, if you look at the number of stops versus those with elevators, it is grossly inaccessible.
Yes.
Right. So how do you get to these offices? Some of these offices, right, don't have proper width on doorways, proper mm-hmm. elevator, what all the different things that go with making areas fully accessible.
Right. So
as companies maybe pivot to a hybrid or work from home model, mm-hmm. you might have more opportunities available to you. I'm not going to say broad blanket. You might. It depends on where you live, what you do, all that other things that come into play. Mm-hmm. As well as, you know, from a family perspective, right? If you're a parent and your child is the one with a disability or need, mm-hmm. Right? You've been home for 15 months. How are they been getting there? If they are someone who needs physical therapy, are they someone who needs regular doctor's appointments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who now takes care of that when you're back in the office? Mm-hmm. Is that an additional cost?
Right.
You know, whatever you had previously, do you go right back to it? Or maybe you pivot and, you know, maybe as a parent, you say, hey, I was in the office full time. I'm not going to pivot to a hybrid or work from home. So I could take on some of those responsibilities.
Yes.
For whatever reason. Maybe it's less expensive if you're there. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to change your career anyway and it syncs up well. So there's different things that can come into play here. Mm-hmm. When it specifically related to kind of the disabled and special needs community, this back to work model that we're looking at here.
So I'm hearing you say, Matt, I'm hearing about on one hand, there could be more opportunities and therefore more income, more money for folks, for example, who could not get to an office, maybe were either discouraged from or could not work at a company or organization. And I'm also hearing about, on the other hand, there might be some additional costs. If let's say somebody has a child with special needs, who there might be some expenses around getting that person to and from their appointments. Again, it's like this pandemic and what we're coming out of, we're finding on one hand opportunities and changes that can save us money. And then we're also finding changes that might cost us money. So I'm hearing a bit.
Yeah, and also, you know, this virtual world, a lot of companies have proven it's effective, right? So a lot of people have made it more accessible doing these Zoom meetings. Yeah. Closed captioning. Zoom now offers free closed captioning for a lot of people. That's helpful to people who have hearing issues or people, you know, or all these different companies have now had to adapt and make things more accessible, which is great. We need more of that.
Yes.
And it seems this pandemic has kind of fast tracked it. You look at like Instagram now, auto caption stories, stuff like that should be the standard.
Yes.
It shouldn't be a, ooh, look at us, fancy new toy. It should be there regardless.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, from an employment law perspective, a lot of companies that in the past said that they could not accommodate a disabled person in terms of remote work because they said it won't work. It's too logistically impossible. It's too operationally challenging. Now they're finding, hey, we can do it. And while things might shift a bit in terms of more people getting back into in-person sales or in-person meetings, there's always that ability to I shouldn't say always. In some white-collar jobs, there's the ability, if they can do Zoom for 15 months, it's hard for the company then to tell someone they can't accommodate them. So there are legal, I think, implications of this pandemic. It's sort of opened up, hopefully, I hope as well, a new world, maybe for those who've been felt disenfranchised, you know, isolated like in the past because of their special needs, which I think I agree with you on. I know I agree with you on. This should not be... It should be the basic thing that we take care of everyone and their needs in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole, we can't accommodate you is completely out the window now because you've accommodated everyone else. That excuse is gone.
Right. And we might have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, folks, I was talking with Matt Ricks more on Haystack Financial Planning and budgeting during COVID and after. You're listening to Talk Radio NYC on Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. Once again, I'm your host, Eric Sauver. I'm an employment law and business law attorney at the law office of Eric M. Sauver. And talking here with my friend and colleague, Matthew Ricks, who is a certified financial planner, a CFP, and an MBA. And we're talking about financial planning during COVID and after. And, you know, just to some interesting points that Matt made, I thought I'd kind of discuss a little bit. We talked about the importance of planning for unknown circumstances. I think one thing we've all learned in the last 14, 15 months is just how important it is to have emergency funding and saving. And hearing Matt talk about these different aspects of going back to work, what to consider for your expenses, your budgets, your needs. And then, of course, knowing about resources that exist for you, whether you're a small business owner or an employee, and the importance, of course, of consulting with your counsel, your CPA, and of course, your CFP, your certified financial planner. So, Matt, I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about with Haystack Financial Planning. Do you work mostly, would you say, in any particular geographic area, Northeast, or are you kind of all throughout the nation?
I have clients around the country. Mm-hmm. I even have a couple expats overseas. Oh. However, most of my clients are in the New York City area. Sure. It's just natural, right? Meeting people like yourself, it's just a natural course of business. Most people are here. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a predominant geographic focus.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think that the financial planning advice that you give would differ for people in different areas, like if you had clients in the Southeast versus Northwest? Or,
well, obviously taxes vary state by state, mm-hmm. right? So the tax strategy and some of that would involve me understanding the specific states, right? Someone who lives in Florida where there's no state income tax,
right?
Or Tennessee versus someone in a North Carolina where there is state income tax. Mm-hmm. Or what type of contributions are determined tax deductible, mm-hmm. for a 529 or maybe an ABLE account, right? Mm-hmm. As well as, talking about, the specific to disability or special needs, right? Mm-hmm. How does each state kind of handle some of the expenses and categorize them? Mm-hmm. Are they deductible at a state level or, as well as the federal level? So that varies state by state, as well as the programs, Medicaid, Medicare, some of the Social Security programs, they have slight differences state by state. Mm-hmm. So again, working with the tax professionals, and I have started to build out a network of other advisors who focus on the community, mm-hmm. Where we kind of bounce ideas off each other or cross refer. If someone's out in Utah, I know someone in Utah who they're up to date on all the Utah stuff, right? All the Utah ins and outs. So the client may be better served for me to just refer them to that person,
yes,
or in Illinois or whatever it might be, rather than me be like, hey, I need a little extra time to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm of the mindset of let's collaborate, not compete, right? So if I can better serve someone and better be of service to someone by referring mm-hmm. them to another planner advisor, that I am more than happy to do that because mm-hmm. that's in their best interest.
Right. And it's interesting. They talk about, doing what's best for your client's interest and serving that, whether it's through your own services, whether it's through you are connected to other financial planners and resources that they can benefit from, who might, for example, work exclusively in a different state or another part of the country. I know that in law, we're sort of externally circumscribed from taking on things unless we're barred in those other states. So for me, it would be like I couldn't, for example, represent somebody in a court in Utah. But it's actually good to know that although you have clients who are national, you'll also have connections to other states you can refer people to. And I would also imagine that, correct me if I'm wrong, I imagine that while there are some differences in different states, is it true that there are certain elements of financial planning that just sort of remain kind of uniform principles, like about rule of thumb on saving or spending? Is that true for most states?
Yeah, there's basic tenets of financial planning that apply to everyone.
Right.
Thinking about that type of stuff. So everyone's situation is slightly different based on employee benefits, based on their lifestyle, right? So there's always those intricacies, mm-hmm. And those details that are going to vary. I mean, even think about the New York metro area, New Jersey mm-hmm. versus New York versus Connecticut
sure.
versus Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Very different tax situations, very different cost of living situations potentially, mm-hmm. right? So even right here, there's going to be some variance and some differences. Mm.
Interesting. Yeah. It's funny. If you're in New York City, someone might say upstate, which is they jokingly say like north of GW Ridge. And in fact, it's actually much further out. But we've got about a couple of 3 minutes left in our show tonight. It really flies by, I must say. And so I wanted to give you a couple of minutes, Matt, to just maybe do a wrap up, tell our people how they can reach you and contact you, any events you have coming up. The floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah. Sure. So first of all, thank you again for having me on here. It was a pleasure. Enjoyed our conversation.
You're welcome.
You know, kind of the one big takeaway I hope people get that they're listening out either live or to the replay is your situation is unique.
Yes.
Don't judge yourself against others. Don't feel like you need to set a comparison versus someone else. You don't know what their full situation is.
Right.
So don't, you know, the whole keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's
try to get away from that because you don't know how they're doing it. As far as where people can reach me, I'm on Twitter. It's my name, Matthew Ricks, then underscore. Mm-hmm. Someone was sitting on the handle, Matthew Ricks. So I had to throw the underscore in there.
Got it.
Instagram is Haystack Financial Planning. And then my website is just haystackfp.com.
Okay. Good to know that I have all the information people need, your website, phone number. Did you mention phone number as well? Or did I?
Phone number, yeah. 917-409-7878.
Wonderful. That's all I can get. For those that might want to go old school, we'll pick up the old telephone and give you a call.
Yeah, well, the phone number is out there on all the different sources, so you can find it.
Good point, you can
Google me. I'm on Google Business, all that fun stuff. So, yeah.
Right. Got it. Okay. Yeah, I think it's great to have all your information, Matt. You know, I really hope people reach out, you know, and take advantage of your expertise in terms of your knowledge and your passion. And so really want to thank you for being on the show tonight. So I want to also just say to our audience, if you like what you heard and you like the general theme of our show, helping you through the pandemic, you can tune in every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm here for an hour with various guests of different fields. And again, my name is Eric Sauver and the station Talk Radio NYC. So want to once again, thank you sincerely, Matt. And for all those listening, you can stick around for other great shows this evening, and wishing everyone a great night. Thank you.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Makes Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.